Hello and welcome to Nerdzilla, the podcast for nerds,
geeks,
dorks,
losers,
oddballs,
specky four eyes,
98-pound weaklings,
beady weedies,
dweebs,
freakazoids,
swatters,
wonks,
and goofballs.
I'm Andrew Hogan.
And I'm Joel Reinberger.
Today on the show...
Oh, hang on. Hello, Nerdzilla. Joel speaking.
Hello?
Yeah, who's calling, please?
Hello, this is Kenneth Branagh.
Hold the line.
Who's that?
Ken someone?
What does he want?
I don't know. Let's finish the intro first.
Well, okay. Today, we'll be reviewing the film adaptation of Marvel's comic about the Norse god of thunder.
We'll be arguing the relative merits of Transformers and Lego.
And Joel tells me that his useless or genius item is somehow related to our debate.
Well, that about covers it. You want to talk to Ken, whoever?
Okay. Ken, baby, what can we do for you, mate?
I'd love to talk to you about my film Thor.
Oh, it's that Kenneth.
All right, we'll have a chat with him in a bit. Tell him to wait.
Okay, Kenny, we'll get to you when we get to you, mate. Just enjoy the music.
Bloody Hollywood, always on the phone when you've got a show to do.
Yeah, so look, before we get to Mr. Branagh, let's look at the news.
It's no surprise that my first item is about the PlayStation Network being down for the last week. Now, these are the servers which connect millions of players around the world, enabling the online play which virtually every game now includes, and for some games, it's the only way to play. Now, Sony have admitted that they were hacked and that the intruder got details of names, addresses, dates of birth, passwords, logins, all sorts of stuff. They also couldn't rule out credit card details being stolen too, so if you are on the network, keep an eye on your account. Now, earlier in April, Sony was under attack by the hacktivist group Anonymous, but Anonymous deny being a part of the current problem, and considering how vocal they usually are about their activities, that seems believable. However, Anonymous did say that though the core group wasn't gunning for Sony, some of their individual members may have taken action off their own bat.
I mean, whoever's done this, Joel, apart from all those things, they now also know all of your high scores for every game.
I bet they're really impressed with me as well.
They're currently laughing their heads off at the moment. Speaking of Sony, they've just announced two new tablet PCs, which will be available later this year, with the inspiring name of Sony Tablet. Seriously. Both models will run Android 3, have Wi-Fi and 3G, 4G wireless, as well as, and you're going to love this bit, Joel, connect through Sony's premium network services on the go at any time.
what a timely press release.
Clearly written before this weekend. The S1 model has a 9-inch screen that makes it very much like many of the other Android tablets out there, but the S2 model is more interesting. It has two 5.5-inch screens which fold into each other like a Nintendo DS or like the Donkey Kong Game & Watch game that we all had as a kid. So it really makes it like an iPad that you can fold in half.
Well, see, cleverness like that is sort of why I love Sony, but at the same time I can really hate them. And following their tweets over the last week about their network being down has been so frustrating. We'll keep you up to date and give you more information, and everything they send out has no more information. It's crazy.
I do like the idea of an iPad you can fold in half and put in your shirt pocket. Very interesting. Well, as someone pointed out to me today, you can actually fold any iPod in half. You just can't unfold them again pretty easily.
Since our last podcast, we marked the 50th anniversary of the silicon integrated circuit being patented. It wasn't the first integrated circuit, but it was the first one to be put on something as cheap and plentiful as silicon. Inventor Robert Noyce went on to co-create the Intel Corporation, though he has passed now, Mr. Noyce. And Intel now is worth billions, of course.
I've heard of them, they've done quite well.
And we really can thank, I think, Robert Noyce for the entire computer age.
The last typewriter factory in the world has finally closed down. Godrej and Boyce, the only company in the world still making typewriters, closed down its factory in Mumbai, India on April 25th. I love this quote from the general manager. "We are really not getting that many orders now." I'm like, really?
Did they also stop making penny farthing bikes and Rolodexes?
Oh, no, they're still running out the door. But if you think that's amazing that typewriters were even still being made, consider this. Up until 2009, this company, Godrej & Boyce, were still producing between 10 and 12,000 typewriters a year. Like, who's buying them?
The town of Marshfield in the United States has the distinction of being one of the few places in the entire country where you can't play Space Invaders.
I've heard of this, the town that banned video games.
Yeah, yeah. 29 years ago, they banned games from the town. Now, Faith Jean, who's the woman who put the ban in place, said it was actually about what we in Australia would call poker machines. It was about getting rid of those out of the town, but apparently the people of Marshfield remember her differently as the woman who kicked out Pac-Man.
Oh,
now, at the time, objections to the ban went all the way to the Supreme Court and were defeated. It was said that the town had the right to do this if they wanted to.
Wow.
But now the bylaw against coin-operated video machines might finally be voted down. Perhaps because every kid in town has a games console and coin-operated games are more or less irrelevant. But local bar owners reckon they'll install some pinball machines the moment they become legal again.
And so they should. Speaking of America, Joel, the Governator is back where he belongs. According to website Deadline.com, a new Terminator film starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and directed by Justin Lin from Fast and Furious 5 is being shopped around to Hollywood studios. No script has been written. In fact, there's no scriptwriter even attached to the project yet. But there is no way that this film won't get made.
In upcoming comics, Superman is renouncing his American citizenship. Truth and justice is no longer the American way. Apparently, the Man of Steel joins a peaceful Middle Eastern protest. We've seen quite a few of those recently. And it's taken as an American act of war by the country concerned. So Supes plans to announce to the UN that he's now a citizen of the world. What a total hippie.
Can you imagine Batman joining a peaceful protest? Like, not a chance. It just proves what I've always said about Superman. Season 6 of Doctor Who premiered this week simultaneously in the US and the UK, and the relative ratings are very interesting. BBC America reports that the opening episode was the highest ever rating for the network, with 1.3 million viewers watching the episode that was set in the United States. However, in the UK, the show had an average audience of 6.5 million, which is actually the lowest ever season opener since Doctor Who was revived in 2005. The show has its Australian premiere on April 30th, this weekend, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes over here.
Andrew, you've actually seen this episode, haven't you?
I have, yes. I flew to the UK to
How could you possibly have seen it? By what means? I can't understand how you can see it.
You know why we've got no budget for this show?
Yeah, fair enough. You spent all your money going to see Doctor Who on television somewhere else.
Correct.
What did you think of the episode?
Look, I don't understand why I was so underwhelmed by it, because it's a fantastic premise. Okay, the bad guy aliens are terrific. The acting's fantastic. Mark Shepard, one of my favourite actors, he was the Irish lawyer in Battlestar Galactica, most recently seen as the demon Crowley in Supernatural. He's in it. He's terrific. It's all set in Richard Nixon's White House. The Doctor, Matt Smith, is in fine form, but there was something a bit unsatisfying about it, and I think I worked out what it was.
Mm.
Stephen Moffat, the current showrunner and the writer of this episode, has loaded so many twists, so many cliffhangers, so many oh my god moments, how are they going to resolve this one, that by the end of it, when the actual cliffhanger at the end comes, you're still spinning from all the other stuff and you literally find out nothing. So it's ultimately a bit unsatisfying. I mean, sure, there's cliffhangers and there's cliffhangers, and it's okay for M. Night Shyamalan to make a film and you find out at the end of it that Bruce Willis is dead. Okay, that's fine. Or The Crying Game, when you find out something slightly different. But the problem with this is that he loads them one on top of the other, and I reckon watching this and watching next week's episode one after the other as a long extended TV movie probably will be fantastic. And so I'm going to do that. I'm going to watch the first episode again next weekend and watch the second one as well. But I have to fly back to England, of course, so there goes our budget for next season.
That's one for your PVR, then.
This is Nerdzilla. Listen to by intelligent life forms across the interweb.
It's time for our Geek of the Week now. Kenneth Branagh is a well-known Shakespearean actor and is also the director of the new Marvel movie Thor. He's been on hold for a while on our phone. I wonder if you're still there.
Let me see. Are you there, Kenneth?
Hello?
Kenneth Branagh, welcome to Nerdzilla.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
Fancy that.
Look, a lot of the actors have said that they joined this project because of you, but what made you join the project? How did they convince you to direct a comic book movie?
Well, Every time somebody says comic book movie, it's as if somehow the word comic means that it must be easy or something, when in fact the size of these pictures and the ambition of these pictures really makes them the most enticing, challenging, you know, movie adventures you could possibly wish for. So for a director who, like me, loves going to the pictures and loves the big movie experience, these days comic books provide the chance for the larger-than-life spectacle action that you'd give your right arm to try and make. So for me, it was an irresistible possibility to do it, and to do it with a character like Thor.
And in fact, Thor's, in my mind at least, probably the most Shakespearean of superheroes, and you've got a bit of form for Shakespeare. Was there something of that in it?
Well, I think it meant that Marvel felt that maybe I would not be afraid by the heightened language, and in my Shakespeare films, I've always tried to make the language come out naturally and directly. And as you will know, Stan Lee went on record as saying that he always thought that in the comics that he wanted the characters to speak what would sound like a mixture of Shakespearean English and the King James version of the Bible. I think it wasn't such a bad match. We were going for something more naturalistic, but I think I was happy, not intimidated by the language, and also interested to present this royal family with all these high stakes. You know, the Odin family runs the universe, and when they're in trouble, so's the universe.
Well, one of our radio colleagues actually plays your St. Crispin's Day speech from Henry V at the drop of a hat.
Oh.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers. And it made me wonder what line from Thor you think people will be quoting in the future.
It's interesting. I don't know if you caught one yourself. You might be the best judge of that. I know that across the 2 years or so of the movie, we quote more or less every line. I couldn't tell you, to be honest, what people might be caught by, but I'd be thrilled if they were quoting stuff.
Have you got a favourite? Is there something that really tickled you?
It's a sort of from a dramatic scene, but I like it when Thor just tells Odin, "You're an old man and a fool." It's the kind of nadir of Thor's kind of arrogance and dismissal of his father. He soon comes to realize he's quite the opposite. But I also like Kat Dennings when she has tasered the God of Thunder.
Yes.
And Natalie Portman looks with her mouth open as if to say, "What?" And Kat replies, "Well, he was freaking me out." And frankly, if a 6-foot-4 man arrives in the desert and surprises you rather aggressively and claims to be the God of Thunder, he'd probably freak you out as well.
Surely that happens all the time.
Well, it certainly happens to me, but I'm used to it.
Fair enough. In fact, look, you touched on the Thor and Odin relationship, and I mean, I think that's what makes Thor one of the least geeky superheroes, because let's face it, who hasn't had a fight with their dad and got kicked out of home?
Exactly. Do you know what we used to say early on? We'd say the center of this has to be something which people completely relate to. And on one level, here's Thor with the great hammer, Mjolnir, forged in the heart of a dying star. But I remember talking about it at the first meeting, saying we should think of him as like a 17-year-old boy who's just been given the keys to the car. He's got it. He doesn't quite know how to drive it. He's going to have way too many people in it. He's going to try and press them, and then he's going to crash the car, and Dad's going to have to come and pick him up. And it's all going to get very ugly. On one sort of basic level, those kinds of emotions that situation would produce fuel that kind of situation in Thor. The problem is they are in a position of responsibility. If you run Asgard, you can't do that. If you're going to be the king, you can't do that. Or if you do, you've got to realize what kind of an impact it's going to have. So he has to make some choices, and making those choices is the adventure of the movie.
So when you got given this role, did you earn your geek credibility and have Stan Lee a big load of back issues to read through?
I did read a vast amount of Thor comics. My bedtime reading was the Norse myths, a new copy of Thor every single evening from across the many decades, and then a book about 3D or visual effects. So I was always a three-volume bedtime read. And then as soon as I could, I met with Stan Lee. I had lunch with him. I was thrilled to do that, the man, the legend, with more energy than I could amass in a lifetime, with real clarity about why he decided to do that kind of character. Had read the script, heard my ideas about how I wanted to do it. He just said, "Get on with it. Great, fantastic. I'll see you on the set."
I imagine that meeting Stan Lee, I mean, when you're about to make Thor, would have been a bit like being able to meet Mary Shelley before you made Frankenstein. Was there a bit of pressure?
Well, it was. I was personally very sort of awed. I had the experience last year at Comic-Con in San Diego, the great comic convention, of being around when Stan walked through the halls. I mean, it's like the Beatles arriving. I mean, the guy causes gridlock.
Except it's 40-year-old guys screaming and fainting rather than 15-year-old girls.
Yeah, well, it practically is. But in terms of the Marvel Universe, in terms of Thor, I'm not sure whether I'm even supposed to say this, but let's assume for a second that for the viewers or listeners who may not know, that perhaps he might even be in the film. If he were to have been in the film, and if he were to have shown up on the set one day, picture the scene, we might imagine, where, I mean, people, grown men were weeping. It was incredible, and it was a scene, were it to have actually happened, where a lot of people were around. There was a lot of townies in this quarry, and, you know, and literally there was a round of a burst of applause from a vast number of the crew. It was just, because we all knew, hey, we're here because of him. This is, I mean, he's behind all this, and he's the connection to all those incredible artists, to Kirby and everyone else who's helped create that Marvel Universe that's had such an impact on a generation of fans.
Well, speaking of the Marvel Universe, the upcoming Joss Whedon Avengers film has really made your film and Jon Favreau's Iron Man, Joe Johnson's Captain America, and even Louis Leterrier's Hulk has put them in a unique situation, because I'm sure you wouldn't want to be the one that made the one that sucked, would you?
Well, God knows, I hope not, but there's a tremendous sort of collegiate feeling amongst those directors. You know, John was the first one I spoke to when I was getting into working with Thor. I saw Joe just after he came on board. Joss spoke to me before he took the job. Louis had recommended me for the gig as well. It's a curious thing making these pictures, and only the person who's actually been in that director's chair knows quite what it's like, and you're so thrilled to share some war stories with all of those guys. And all I can say is we're all on each other's sides, I can tell you that, and everybody wishes everybody else well, because they know how difficult it is, and they know we're in this amazing, unique position of being part of what, as a viewer, I absolutely adore, this interlinking Marvel Universe. Nobody's ever done this kind of thing before, and it's really quite something, and it's a privilege to be part of. But I am pro all my directorial colleagues, and I know with the work going into it that none of it'll suck, but it's just whether we win over the fans, whether we win over the fans at all times remains to be seen.
Now, in superhero films, getting the fights right is really important. So what sort of combat style did you develop for the God of Thunder?
Well, he needed to be super flexible with the use of Mjolnir, the mighty hammer. We wanted to begin the process of seeing all the many, many things that could do. The comics tell you many, many versions of it. And then in terms of an experience, a visceral experience of the action, I very much wanted to get inside and close and feel, the danger of being in a fight, in this case, amongst other things, with frost giants, you know, being surrounded by much taller creatures, and giving this sense. And frankly, this was something that my experience of doing the battle scenes in Henry V made me feel was useful and effective, was to put you inside the battle, less worried about great wide shots that showed you everything from above and, you know, inevitably belie the fact perhaps that there's going to be digital replication of people in great big wide shots, effective though they are. But in this case, sort of put you in amongst it and make you scared that hammer's going to come anywhere near you, or Gunnir, or a terrible ice hand, or a terrible destroyer foot, or that kind of sort of physical danger, especially with the enhancement of 3D, was something that I wanted to try and exploit. And at the center of it was the whirling dervish that was Thor.
In fact, what was it like working with Chris Hemsworth as Thor? Because, of course, when I read the comic, I totally thought that Thor was an Aussie.
I always wanted to make a film about an Australian Viking.
Exactly.
Little did I know that the Hemsworth family were producing generations of them. And so Chris was great to work with, because he was physically very flexible, great rhythmic sense, he can move around, learn action sequences. He obviously developed his already impressive physique into a very, very toned and muscular, godlike body. And then he, like me, was very keen to create a character that, in a superhero movie would genuinely change. You'd meet him at the beginning, and by the end he would have gone on an absolute journey that you would have understood, from his arrogance in Asgard to his incredible incredibly funny entitlement on Earth as it butts up against other people's, you know, incomprehension, whether you're a pet shop manager or a person serving him coffee. And then also would provide moments in the latter part of the picture where the Thor without powers, who has to think about whether he ever can be worthy, shares some of that in a very intimate and direct and romantic way with the Natalie Portman character. And so he provided a wonderful acting range and also had tremendous ease in front of the camera and was ready to, with respect, hold his own in a scene with Anthony Hopkins or with Natalie Portman. And so he absolutely delivered on carrying the picture as he must. And I think that Australia has produced another great, screen star.
Kenneth Branagh, thank you so much for being on Nerdzilla today, and best of luck with your new movie.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Nerdzilla in review.
Well, we've spoken to the director of the movie, and we actually went and saw the movie on the weekend, so we thought we should really tell you what we thought of Thor. Andrew, tell us the story.
Well, Thor, for those who don't know, is one of the stable of superhero films being made from Marvel Comics characters in the lead-up to Joss Whedon's Avengers film, which has just started filming this week. The film isn't based on any one Thor comic book story. Rather, it provides a slightly different take on the events that see the God of Thunder exiled to Earth. In this movie, Asgard has been at peace for many years following a devastating war with the Frost Giants, who are pretty awesome, the final battle of which we see in flashbacks, and it looks great. King Odin is about to hand over the crown to his older son Thor when something interrupts the ceremony and Thor ends up doing what all rebellious kids tend to do, something really stupid that pretty much starts the war all over again. Odin, not surprisingly, is a little annoyed at this and so he banishes Thor to the worst possible place, Earth. Now, what I loved about the plot of the film was that Branagh has constructed a really simple, straightforward story. You know, there are no complicated flashbacks, techno-babble or convoluted plot devices, and it doesn't have that lightning-fast exposition on the run that people like J.J. Abrams love to use. You know, contrast with the Star Trek reboot. It's a story that moves forward at the right pace and pretty much every scene is enjoyable.
Unlike a lot of other superhero films too, you don't have to go through this big explanation of why the person is motivated to become a superhero who's basically an anonymous policeman in a clown suit, which is a really big leap to have to make. This sort of goes the other way. It's explaining how a god has become a human. And I quite like that about the plot. The one thing that really annoyed me is the hammer of Thor. Mjolnir is a very big part of the plot, and Thor earning the right to wield the hammer again is very important. And I was waiting for how they were going to solve certain aspects of him getting hold of the hammer again and earning the right to use it again. And it ended up being a big, dumb Deus Ex Machina moment that I went, oh, they've just made magic solve it. So that part of the plot didn't really work for me, but the rest of it trots along really nicely and, like you say, very simply.
Let's talk about the acting. Hemsworth is terrific as Thor. He delivers the Asgardian lines like they are Shakespeare, with the right combination of gravitas and arrogance, and he's very funny as the fish-out-of-water Thor on Earth. I thought he was excellent as that. Natalie Portman and Kat Dennings are fine as the scientists chasing the cosmic activity that brings Thor to Earth. And look, it was really good to see the ever-reliable Stellan Skarsgård as the token Scandinavian who conveniently remembers the Norse gods stories from his childhood. We need a Scandinavian. Get Stellan Skarsgård. I want to make special mention of Idris Elba as the gatekeeper Heimdall because he's just such an excellent actor and he's got an amazing presence in this role as well as an awesome helmet.
Look, I've got to say there was some fuss over the fact that a black actor was cast in what was essentially the folklore of a white people, but I didn't feel any moment of doubt or disappointment or weirdness about it. He was just fabulous. He's just this you know, this rock of a man holding a sword and being the gatekeeper to the whole kingdom of Asgard. He was perfect.
Yeah, there was not one moment when you didn't believe that he would seriously keep the bad guys out.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what was great. But almost the best performance, I think, comes from Tom Hiddleston as Thor's scheming brother Loki. This is actually his first big-budget Hollywood film. He's previously worked with Kenneth Branagh in the television series Volander, and which he was great in as well, and I really enjoyed that. He's terrific because his Loki is, yes, he's scheming, yes, he's a little bit evil, yes, you know he's up to something, but he's not a two-dimensional character. He's probably the most complex, deep character in the whole film.
I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here again and say there was just one thing that bugged me about one of the actors, and it wasn't the performance. I'm talking about Jamie Alexander, who played Sif, the female warrior. In Asgard, there aren't many female warriors, and she's actually made it into the Warriors 3. She's meant to be one of the toughest women in Asgard, and her performance as Sif is absolutely fine. And in fact, for me, the best 3D moment of the entire film is where she leaps over the top of the screen and stabs the bad guy through the neck, and it's just really amazingly done. It's just about her physical presence. Mm-hmm. And I've seen too many movies recently where women are cast as warriors and they have the Hollywood waif body. Now, Chris Hemsworth in this looks like Thor.
Oh, yeah.
He has muscles on his muscles. He looks great. And she looks like a Hollywood actress and, you know, she's got fine muscle tone, but she doesn't have muscle bulk. And as someone who's practiced martial arts for a long time, I've known some warrior women and they put on muscle. For me, the best casting ever of a warrior woman was Jeanette Goldstein, who played Vasquez in Aliens. She looked like a commando. She had pectoral muscles and she had biceps and triceps. She looked fantastic. And I really wish, if you're going to cast people as these warrior types, get the women to work out the way the men do, because that's what they would do if they were warriors, and they'd have that muscle.
Hey, Joel, you ever been mistaken for a man?
No, Andrew, have you?
Oh, boom, boom. You did touch on it just then. Let's talk about the special effects and the 3D. This is the only part of the film that annoyed me. The visual effects are fine. Asgard looks wonderful, and the costumes and the sets are spot on. In fact, unlike directors like Zack Snyder, who shoot almost entire films with virtual sets created on computers, Branagh had his team physically build a lot of the sets, and when done well, that really makes a difference. It's the 3D that was a problem. It just annoys the hell out of me. Quite simply, artificial 3D does not make a movie look better, and people just better stop thinking that it does.
It looks like the old ViewMaster in places. There's a foreground and a midground and a background, and they all look like two-dimensional constructs that are set in front of and behind each other.
Yeah, look, it doesn't make it more realistic, and it has the potential to make things look worse. I don't know why. Well, I do know why they use it, and it's a whole different reason. In Thor, the action sequences are noticeably blurry because of the effect that 3D has on frame rates, and the whole film is much darker than it should be because it's shot on 3D. Also, there are actually a lot of scenes where the image really isn't 3D. Like, if you peeked a look without your glasses on, it looked exactly the same, except amazingly brighter, because you're not wearing 50% grey sunglasses. You know, I think a movie like Thor would have looked great shot in IMAX. Sure, fantastic. Mm. But artificial 3D does not improve the experience one bit. What I did really like about the production was Patrick Doyle's soundtrack. It's fantastic music in the film. It really lifts things. It's the right music at the right time. It's great to see a film not scored by James Newton Howard or Hans Zimmer.
Or Danny Elfman, yeah.
Hans Zimmer is like the new Danny Elfman. I looked up what he'd done because I didn't recognise his name, and he's worked with Kenneth Branagh lots in the past on his Shakespeare films and things like that. I thought that was a great part of the film. So look, ignoring my problem with the general concept of artificial 3D, Thor is a great picture. Kenneth Branagh has managed to nail down what a comic book superhero movie should be. A simple, straightforward story, good-looking characters doing outrageous things, a really grand stage to perform on, and it doesn't get much grander than Asgard, and a sense of fun without making fun of the characters. Jon Favreau did it really well with Iron Man.
Yeah, I agree.
And Branagh's done it really well here. Look, the movie is certainly no 4-hour Hamlet, But then again, we don't want it to be. I liked how we didn't have to sit through yet another boring superhero origin story. And I enjoyed the way Tom Hiddleston's Loki was a lot more complex than in the comics. Oh, and it looks like Loki will play an important role in the Avengers film. Mm. And don't forget, everybody, this is a Marvel film. So make sure you stay until the end of the credits.
Flame War on Nerdzilla.
Debate time.
We were thinking about debating Optimus Prime versus Megatron today, but that required a depth of Transformers knowledge that for some reason still eludes Joel.
I'll watch the box set on the weekend, I promise. I'll watch it as it remains sitting at the DVD store and nowhere near my DVD player.
Oh, ha, ha, ha. So instead, we're going to compare our favourite childhood toys.
I was a Lego boy all the way.
And I was way into the Transformers.
So the official debate angle is, which was the cooler toy?
Oh, okay. Well, you're up first. You have 360 words, Joel, starting now.
Transformers have the name that Lego deserves, because once you've got a decent pile of Lego, it can be transformed into anything you imagine. When I was a kid, I had maybe 6 kits, some town Lego, a couple of spaceships, and some tech stuff that made a car. With those combined, I also built planes, castles, guns, people, dinosaurs, and even submarines, which I tested in our pool. While Transformers have only 2 forms, a lame one and a lamer one. In a world full of Porsches, tanks, and rocket sleds, they chose to model toys after the car your Nana drove. And that turned into a robot, which was clearly a car's ass with a face printed on it.
What?
Transformers are a naff toy with a marketing campaign disguised as a cartoon. But let's not get into the sins of the Transformers media adaptations. Curse you, Michael Bay! This debate is about the toys. And Lego is a Toy is so cool, there are 4 Legoland theme parks getting 6 million visitors a year. The men who build the amazing Lego creations are known as artists. But a man who plays with Transformers all day, he's known as a virgin. If what you like about Transformers is the characters and the story, well, Lego does the same thing, but better, with Bionicles. And recently, Lego released robot kits. So your Lego will actually turn into a real working robot, and then back into a million other things. As a parent, I'd much prefer to give my son Lego over Transformers, because Lego teaches 3-dimensional thinking and fine motor skills, while creating quiet and creative playtime. While Transformers play is just non-stop noise. Meow, pew, 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 Dad, I'm bored. I'm sure Andrew will point out some of the sillier Lego sets, but even the worst of them can be broken down and rebuilt into something cool. But if you buy a stupid Transformer, like the ultra-creepy hentai-style Kiss Player Transformers, which are powered by the kisses of young Japanese girls, well, your stupid Transformer is a stupid Transformer forever.
I'm not even going to talk about Lego in mine.
You always avoid the actual topic. Even when you choose the topic, you avoid the topic.
Well, let's find out.
Let's do 360 words from now.
Let's get one thing out of the way. Transformers would kill Lego in any battle imaginable. Think about it. A Transformer faced with an aggressive Lego opponent just has to think, am I a car or a plane? If so, transform into a robot and kick Lego's ass. Lego, on the other hand, has to work out what they want to build themselves into. Then they've got to make sure they have enough 2x4 bits and flat bits and clear bits and long ones and angles and square blocks so they can make themselves into some sort of attacking machine which might have some vague chance of competing against a Transformer. So, now that we've established that Transformers would take Lego out the back and smack them upside the head in any battle, let's just look at who's cooler. The Transformers are giant robots who can transform into vehicles. Well, okay, they aren't giants, but you get the idea. When you buy a Transformer, you get a killer robot and a car, truck, plane, Walther P-38, pistol, hovercraft, ghetto blaster or microscope. All these things are awesome. With Lego, you have to use your imagination. What a toss. Trying to think about how you're going to turn that big bucket of blocks into something you can kill aliens with. Boring. Transformers give you the best of both worlds. Not the Star Trek Next Generation episode, best of both worlds, but almost. They're a rocket, then they're a robot. they're a sports car, then they're a robot, they're a dinosaur, then they're a robot, they're a goddamn city, then they're a robot, they're a boombox with aggro cassettes, and then they're a robot. And Lego is, well, just a bunch of bricks. Transformers are cool because they had a TV show. And the TV show was so cool that Hollywood nobbers decided to drop millions of dollars on it to make a movie. And then another movie. And apparently another movie. Two of these movies even starred Megan Fox. Not one Lego movie has ever had Megan Fox in it at all. Actually, there hasn't been any Lego movies, which is why they aren't cool.
Your last point is moot. There is a Bionicles movie.
Has it got Megan Fox in it?
Yes, it does.
No, it does not. My last point is not moot. And I mean, what about my first point? In a stand-up fight, no contest.
Admittedly, if you bash a Lego creation against a Transformer, the Transformer will win. That's very true. But Lego is a better swimmer.
Explain.
If you put Lego in the pool, it floats.
I've watched Transformers on the weekend with my son and the hovercrafty guy.
No. Toys. If we're going to get into media adaptations, we have to talk about the massively successful Lego video game franchise. And remember the Lego Black Ops parody on YouTube? That is just totally awesome.
Yeah, but Lego can't really do that.
Transformers can't really transform. What they do is sit there.
And anyway, your grandmother does not drive a red semi-trailer. That's ridiculous, what you said.
You don't know my nana, Andrew.
Hi, this is Michael Shanks of Stargate SG-1, and you're listening to Nerdzilla.
Now, Joel, I'm intrigued this week by your suggestion that the useless or genius item has something to do with our debate. Is it a picture of you getting your ass handed to you again?
What, by a Transformer? Optimus giving me a spanking?
Oh, but look, possibly. What you do in your spare time is totally up to you.
Now, this is a really fabulous invention made by a Lego-loving comic reader. Now, this came to me from the website Technobob. The designer is a guy named Jonathan Robson, and apparently when he was a kid, he got some comics that were based on Lego blocks, and these comics helped him to read. So he sort of made something similar today. He's made these Lego comics which come with a helmet which makes you look like one of the little Lego men.
Okay, that's actually pretty cool on its own.
And it's got a USB port in the back of the helmet. And you know you can get Lego block USB drives now?
Yes, I've seen them.
You get one of those and it comes with audio. And you plug it into the helmet and the helmet reads the Lego comic story to you.
On the back of your head, sort of Matrix style, jacking in. Does it go right into your skull?
It's like those stories you used to get as a kid. It would read the story for you as you read along, and then we go, turn the page now.
When you ding.
When you hear the fairy giggle, turn the page.
I've got two read-along comic books from Star Trek in the 70s on vinyl. 7-inch vinyl record in the back of the comic book.
Well, this is, I guess, an updated version of that, but it's special Lego-based comics with a Lego helmet as well. And the helmet also has controls on the side for the volume and for skipping forward to the next page.
Do you know who's reading these comics? I mean, look, it'd be awesome if it was like James Earl Jones or somebody. You know.
Well, I guess there's a whole Lego Star Wars franchise, so I don't see why you couldn't have James Earl Jones, as long as it's not Hayden Christensen reading them.
That would be lame. Actually, to be honest, what's in a Lego comic? Is it a whole lot of bricks getting together and going, hey, what do you want to make? Oh, I want to make a plane. Oh, we got no triangle bits. Yeah, I mean, it's like that.
Well, Lego has so many franchises now. There's a massive load of pirate stuff. There's town stuff. There's rescue stuff. There's all these different Lego themes, and I assume the comics are based on those themes.
So I'm looking at the picture now, Joel, and I must admit, there's this kid reading a comic in it. It just looks exactly like a Lego head. What if you plugged in something else into the USB?
I don't know what,
like, you know, a bit of music, MP3s, you know, some stuff. Yeah.
I don't see why you couldn't, because I guess that's the thing. It's effectively an MP3 player.
It's a really, really
but
big...
But it's a massive motorcycle helmet MP3 player.
So, you know, while Steve Jobs is out there shrinking the iPod Nano, this bloke's going the other way. He's going, no, Steve, big.
Yeah. Useless or genius, Andrew?
Oh, gee, it's like, yeah, I'd buy one. I'd just buy it. It's completely useless and I'd buy one.
Nerd Nerdzilla.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are done for the day.
For the fortnight, in fact.
But do tell your friends about us. There's always room for another P in our podcast.
Just between you and us, you might soon be able to hear us on the radio.
We're negotiating for a spot on the digital dial, which would be great because then you'll be able to call us with comments.
But until that magical day, you can get in touch with us in all the usual nerdy ways.
Email nerdzilla@hotmail.com.au.
Pop a post on our Facebook page.
Sling us a tweet at ABC Nerdzilla.
Or leave a comment on one of our blog posts. Just head to the best website in the universe, abc.net.au/local/nerdzilla.
I'm Joel Reinberger, and I'm cooler than a carbonite creature in a cave on Hoth.
I'm Andrew Hogan, and I'm hotter than Johnny Storm's armpit during a firefight with Pyro.
Flame on!